Hello, everyone. Thank you for coming. Nice, intimate group this morning. We're excited to do this. I'll quick intro of these two. I'll let them introduce themselves. We'll talk a bit about content, about audience. But yeah, let's get started. So the panel is called Transforming Traditional Industries Through Content. The two individuals we have up here are two of the biggest real estate personalities today. So we have Samir Mizrahi, who has not only started Zillow Gone Wild, which is one of the two biggest real estate accounts today, but has also built a number of other accounts that reach 16 million people, Kale Salad being one of them. Next to him is Glenda Baker, who is probably the most well-known personality today amongst the realtor community. Glenda built a million follower audience in the past 4 or 5 years, and has really commanded the real estate industry through her authenticity, and is really probably one of the most in-demand speakers in the business. Quickly on me, I run a company called Estate Media, and I'm very fortunate to work with both of these individuals, which is how I know them. We're really creating a digital destination for the real estate industry and its fans. And so our goal is to work with people like Glenda, to work with people like Samir, and create programming across all mediums that is entertaining but also educational. So with that being said, let's dive into it, guys. Let's tell the audience a little bit about your stories. So how you started making content, right? A bit of background, and then we'll dive a bit more into your content strategy. So Glenda, kick us off. When did you start making content? Why, how, et cetera?
Welcome, welcome, welcome. My name is Glenda Baker. I am a real estate agent in Atlanta, Georgia. And back in 2016, I started with this video thing, and I said, oh goodness, I'm gonna do this thing called Glenda Live. And like 45 people tuned in. And I was all sweaty and it was terrible. And then I got all worked up with an inspector and I did a video for my car. And somebody in my audience said, you should call this Posts from the Porsche. I was like, oh, I like that. So I would do videos in my car about real-time real estate. And then I went to a conference 3 years ago and saw a kid that had posted a video about real estate. He had 43,000 views on TikTok. I said, if he can do it, I can do it. And I created a TikTok account. And I talk off camera, so like I'm talking to someone. And I went from 122 followers to 500,000 followers in about 3 months. And that really kind of catapulted my success in real estate. So I help people with this little series called Sugar and Spice Real Estate Advice, buy, sell, invest in real estate. And then one day I gave an agent tip about how to be a better real estate agent, and I've created a cult following of real estate agents on my platform. So that's a little bit about me, but Samir, he's the star here.
No, far from it. You want my whole creator history?
Yeah, let's do the abridged version, but and then how you started, I mean, creating, you know, two of the biggest accounts on Instagram. Yeah.
So in like, I guess we could start at 2015, I started like a meme account, Cold Kale Salad. That was a popular punchline in those days. And funny thing is some people think it's Kale's a lad, but no, it's Kale Salad. And like back then people had accounts and they weren't really trying to like, I say like hack or like manipulate or like take advantage of platforms to make money, to have an audience, to sell things. People just kind of had accounts and it was fun. And I quickly realized like kind of the formula of like wholesome meme. That was a lot of stuff was aggregated from Twitter and it just was crushing Explore. Like if you were on Instagram back then, like the first post in your Explore feed was probably one of the memes that I had posted. I had more reach then than I do today just because of like how well that was doing and on a much smaller account. And that like grew and has done pretty well. And I won an award for it, like a Shorty Award, which is like there's one meme award you can win and then that's it. So it was all downhill from there. And then during the, I want to say in like 2020, as TikTok is picking up, I started just like reviewing celebrity houses myself. Just like the app made it so easy with green screen, and I've always been kind of into real estate. So I don't know what clicked in my head that I should just start like get in front of the camera and do it. And I grew a little audience for myself around that, which was a lot of fun. And then shortly after doing that, I guess another like moment that clicked, like, okay, I love to browse Zillow. I love to, like, when I'm bored on my phone, I like to look at houses everywhere. And I think other people do that, but there wasn't a space for people to like talk about that. So I started the account, and it just, that was like December 2020, and it just like immediately took off, was really well received. And then a few weeks later, SNL did a sketch on Zillow. So like I knew I was on the right track. And then like a bunch of other accounts came up. So I was really lucky in that I hit like stride with that. And then now, yeah, it's just been growing since then. It's so much fun. It's very top of mind for people. I'm always getting sent listings. Local news always writes up the listing that I post. And yeah, I don't know. It's been a lot of fun, and I like it more than the meme space just because I'm kind of like, I'm one of the biggest accounts there, and it's, I don't know, it's fun.
So you guys both had these very quick kind of meteoric rises on social, right? 0 to 500,000 in a couple of months. Samir, 2020, launched Zillow Gone Wild, now under just under 5 million. Has your guys' content changed, right? As you have gotten bigger, it sounds like early on, hey, this is interesting, right? It's something that I see opportunity in. Let's make content around this. As you've gotten bigger, those audiences have gotten bigger, have you guys changed how you think about content, right? So from when you started to today, is it a more kind of calculated, data-driven approach, right? Are you still doing the same stuff you did that really brought you guys that audience to start? I'm curious just what that content journey has looked like.
Well, for me, definitely my content has changed. It has evolved over the time that I've been on social media. But what really was the standout for me was the stickiness. So once someone follows me, I had this very low unfollow rate. And TikTok reached out to me. I thought it was like some like hoax email. And they're like, hey, we want to talk to you because you don't do anything. And I'm like, excuse me? They're like, you don't dance, you don't cook, you don't DIY. Like, why do people continue to follow you? And for me, that was when it really hit, like, wait a minute, they're biting into not only what I'm posting, but they're biting into my delivery. So when I shoot my videos, it is, the majority of it is off camera, unless I'm worked up about something, then my head spins around, snot flies out of my nose, and then I look at the camera. But typically, what am I talking to my best friend about? What am I talking to my best client about? What am I talking to my therapist about real estate? And because I look off camera, the audience is like a fly on the wall. Their concept is, oh, wait a minute, I'm getting to listen to her talk to her best friend. Like, she's not telling anybody else this. And that really was the secret sauce to kind of tell the story. I tell a lot of stories, but probably the biggest video that I've had is Once Upon a Time I Sold a Big Ass House. And I talked about how I made $137,000 on one house and I pissed it away. And so the videos where there's trauma or drama definitely have been where I have found the most kind of traction, let's call it.
Samir? I think, I don't know. I think in terms of how, let me think about it. I think early days, I kind of figured out what people were really into and like the style of home and also just like what's out there. I was always into real estate, but was never into mid-century modern. I didn't know how many people have built castles in America from like $50,000 to like, there's like a $40 million castle in Connecticut. So it just kind of do like not sticking to one specific home that I think the audience would like and always trying to test like maybe they're interested in this thing. Like, I realize people really love libraries. So if the home has a really nice library, like, that's an automatic post. I think it's evolved where I kind of know what I'm looking for, and it is a lot of submissions. So I'm just combing through submissions to see what's new, what's out there. It's a little scary because you never know, like, are people going to stop listing their houses? Is there going to be no more wild homes to post? But thankfully, there's always wild homes to post. Like, they're always out there. They're always coming up.
There's always going to be people listing their house. I promise you that.
Thank you.
So we were talking a bit about this last night. Samir, you were talking about your TikTok journey, right, and how it started you really quickly. Now it's not as important as a platform. Glenda, this morning you posted an Instagram story. It was driving to TikTok. How do you guys think about platform growth, right? How do you think about creating content for, hey, I'm creating this video, it's going to live everywhere, versus I'm creating a specific piece of content that I know is going to do well on TikTok, right, versus Instagram, versus Twitter, right? Samir, I think one of your posts last month got, 25 million views on Twitter, but maybe didn't do as well on Instagram. So when you're making content or thinking about content, how do you think about how it moves between platforms? And is that part of the calculus when you guys are thinking of what you're doing?
So for me, you know, I mean, I'm 100 years old. Like, I'm a 57-year-old real estate agent in Atlanta, Georgia. So believe it or not, there's this thing called Facebook. And those people all know me. Those are like my real friends. Instagram, that is people who know of me and know me pretty well. And then TikTok is people that have no idea who I am. And so I do create my content based on my relationship with the audience. And I think that that is a critical piece, is knowing what is your audience looking for. Don't be afraid to ask them, what is it that you're looking for? What is it that you want? And giving them that. For me, I really try and create content that is real, relatable, reliable, and relevant. And everything falls under that umbrella. That's kind of my persona, and that's what they bite into. So I think that you need to understand your audience, because if you don't, it's just like you're shooting in the dark. You don't know where the target is. When you, like, I wore this star jacket, and all these comments were like, oh, I love your jacket, I love your jacket. I'm like, oh, these star things, that might have like a place in my persona. And now I always wear something with stars on it. And if I don't, they're like, oh, why aren't you wearing your stars? So you'd be surprised at what your audience will bite into, but you need to communicate with them to know that.
Yeah, I think that goes to like looking at the comments, reading the comments, seeing what sticks out to people. Like, an early post that I had was this mansion in Connecticut, and in the back of the house, it was this really nice estate, was a potato shed. It was just this like stone old potato shed full of potatoes. And now every post, there's always comments, there's no potato shed, I wish there was a potato shed, like, where could we put the potato shed? So like, really like paying attention to your audience. So I'll always mention, like, in the listing or something, like, there's plenty of room for a potato shed. But I think, like, for me, it kind of goes into just the way the platforms are. There's anywhere between 50 to 100 photos on a listing. On Instagram, I need to find the best 10 images. And what my favorite thing to do is to see what people share. So, like, I'll click through and to see, like, what's the money shot, what's the room that they really loved. And then Facebook, you can do unlimited, so a little bit more flexible there. And just the mechanics of Twitter or X, I just think like things go way more viral there, and then you can kind of have a thread with it, and each piece has its own life. And like, yeah, last month there was a home in Arizona, a $20 million home with every possible thing you could imagine. I'll just mention there's like a go-kart track in the home, and it got 25 million views. I gained like 30,000 followers on it. It was like a lot of fun.
So, you know what you should do is that could be your Easter egg. The potato could be your Easter egg, and you could put your face and hide it in every post with potato.
I'm going to do it.
I mean, it's a great idea, even if it is mine.
So I think something you guys have both done really well, which you alluded to, is like your audience has this parasocial relationship with you, sometimes in person, right? I've been with you and people will come up, wait in line, they'll wear their stars, right? Samir, you have the potato shed example. It's a way of like developing that connection with your audience. And you both have done a really good job of building loyalty, right, with audience in different ways. We've been talking about this a lot, right? TikTok, what's going to happen? It's more important than ever to own that audience, right? We don't know what's going on with platforms, right? As you said, Samir, too. One day it's working really well on TikTok, the next it's not. Glenda, 3 weeks ago, her Instagram was banned for impersonating a celebrity, right? So in one day, right, essentially hundreds of thousands of people that followed you, you were unable to communicate with them on that platform. So with all this being said, how do you guys think about owning audience, right? Moving them, owning them, being able to communicate with them directly. And what's the strategy moving forward for you both?
Now more than ever, and I learned on February 20th when my account was disabled and they sent me a message and said, we're permanently deleting your Instagram. I nearly had a nervous breakdown because they said I was impersonating a celebrity, that celebrity being me. And there was no way, there's no contact phone number. You're in a queue. Getting it back is just absolutely almost impossible. So now more than ever, moving your audience to an email list is critical. Keep in mind that conversion happens in conversation and conversation happens in comments. Anytime that you can get them to DM a word, sign up for a list, sign up for a freebie that you're giving, that is critical. You know, take Taylor Swift. She is a great blueprint of audience loyalty. And what she has done is be the first to know. If you want a chance to get early access to tickets, you need to be on the VIP list. If, you know, hate them or love them, the Kardashian Jenners have done a better job than anybody else with 1.5 billion cumulative followers, 23% of that being bots. They have 71% of their followers in an somewhere in an email. So if their Instagram got taken away or any of their accounts got shut down, they can communicate with their audience directly. And that is what I just want to be an advocate and an encourager of more than anything after that experience. I mean, we have someone with Instagram on our board and we can't even miraculously get my account back in a second. So think about if you don't have anybody to go to. So move those people into a list that you own that isn't tethered to some sort of platform or software.
Yeah, I've always been interested in where you can move the audience to, whether it's from Twitter to Instagram, from Instagram to Facebook, and just always testing that out. Like newsletters are, I have a little over 200,000 subscribers to newsletter, and I've got 1.something million followers on Instagram. And like the number that I'm always talking about is that newsletter number because they're like my audience, and I can, you know, I have that relationship with them. And Instagram, Facebook, the other places, you never know what's going to happen there. But I'm always trying to test like Insta stories, and like Twitter threads are fun because you can just add like follow me on Instagram. And I've seen some success there. So like, where can you move your audience around? So you have like, if something goes down or something, if you lose reach or something, that you have them somewhere else.
You know, before when we thought TikTok was going to get banned, I told my TikTok people to follow me on Instagram, and that day I got 13,000 more followers on Instagram. So don't be afraid to call to action, to tell them what to do. Like, they're your audience. They're going to do what you tell them to do. Train them to not only follow you on one place, but to follow you in multiple places. If you want to make sure that you know everything, the behind the scenes, the secret stuff that nobody gets to see, sign up for my newsletter, follow my podcast. Those kinds of things. Anytime that you can cross-pollinate on different platforms, you're just making your brand stronger. And that is what is critical.
So with those audiences and owning them, how do you think about monetization? So, you know, we talk a lot about content product fit. I mean, you brought up the Kardashians, one of the best examples, right? If you know who your audience is, you guys both just talked about understanding your audience. How do you think about monetizing that audience? You know, we work with both of you guys in brand partnerships, strategic partnerships. Glenda, you're in education. Samir, I know you just launched a new product as well. But how do you guys think about moving that audience, and how are you thinking about monetizing it, right? Both on and off platform.
My biggest monetization is classes and courses. Having real estate agents sign up for, you know, being authentic, branding, building their social media audience, whether it's farming or open houses, just trying to hit them with every single thing. If you're not doing some sort of courses, I really think you're missing a huge opportunity, because that business is billions of billions of billions of dollars, and it's money that you can make in your sleep. But for me, I want to make sure that anything that we monetize is something that I believe in. So I throw a lot of shade at Zillow, and you know, that's on Friday I talk shit about Zillow. Oh, sorry, maybe not a bad word here. Sorry. I throw a lot of shade at Zillow, and so if Zillow came and offered me a big bag, it wouldn't matter, because my audience knows that I think they're the devil. So
I have to say, I love Zillow.
I know. It's okay. You can love them and I will hate them. But the thing about it is that you have to be true to your audience. And what is your audience going to buy? So I just did something with my plastic surgeon. Well, I'm 57 years old. My demographic, 63% women, they're going to the plastic surgeon. Like, I'm a money ticket for that guy. So figure out where authentically and realistically you can monetize your audience. Because once you jeopardize that trust by recommending something that is not true to your brand, not true to you, you are going to start losing those followers. They're going to look at you like nothing more than just, you know, somebody that they don't trust, but they may enjoy following.
Yeah, I like to call myself the world's worst person at monetizing, because I'm still very under-monetized. But I think it follows along with, like, what can you get your followers to do, and not being too precious with that. I mean, you want to be true to your brand and who you are, and not sell something you don't believe in, and then your followers are like, this thing sucked, or I didn't like this. But since it's still very early in the account to me, that I've been very slow and purposeful with what I monetized. I've done some branded things with, like, shows. Like, I did the Bachelor House. I've done something with, like Dunkin' Donuts. They had a new product, and we, like, took stock photos, and we made a fake house, and we put, like, product on a table inside the house. Like, there's a Zillow product where you can have a fake listing. So, like, there was a Pop-Tarts house on Zillow. So I did, like, a post about that. But I think there's also, like, adjacent products that I'm thinking about that the audience would like. A potato, I could sell a potato.
Think about books.
Books, yeah, I mean, coffee table books. There's a lot in the space. Like, I haven't ever sold a listing. There's something in that world where I could be more realtor-focused, which I'm new to. So I think, like, I don't know, it goes to being like figuring out what your audience would be into.
I'm here to be your realtor fairy godmother.
I need a Georgia spinoff page.
That's right.
So what I find interesting too, largely in this space, the big personalities have built those followings from TV. My co-founder Josh Flagg has been on a show, Million Dollar Listing, right? That audience over time has translated to social. Despite that, he isn't as big as either of you guys, right, on social combined. Now, again, Josh is one example, selling Sunset, right, really blew up on television. Chip and Joanna Gaines, right, their show really was kind of the thing that birthed their celebrity. Samir, you have a show coming up, right, on HGTV. Glenda, I know that you have been approached to do TV probably more times than I can count. I want to hear both of your approaches on television, right? So, Glenda, why not, Why have you not done that today? And Samir, why are you doing it, right? With almost 5 million followers, you know the reach on HGTV probably isn't close to that, but I'd love to hear your guys' kind of strategic thinking around television and where it plays or doesn't play in your strategy.
I'm not a no to all television. I'm just a no to sensationalism of real estate. Like, I'm not walking around in my stilettos in a septic field. Like, give me a break. Like, that would damage my brand. People know that I'm not doing that. If I've got to play nice with somebody to be on television, like, if you act up, like, I'm going to call you out. I don't like anybody having that type of control over me. I also think, and you made the perfect example, is that virality and vanity isn't money I can put in the bank. I make a truckload of money selling real estate. I am focused on selling real estate and what moves the needle for that. That is my deal. So I'm not focused on vanity and virality. I'm focused on visibility and value, because I know that if I am visible in my space and I bring value to my audience, that the money not only follows through buyers and sellers and courses and brand partnerships, but it's sustainable. And that is where I think that most creators miss the boat. They want the hit it and quit it money. They're not looking for the sustainability. And I know an amazing real estate agent in Atlanta who was on the Ladies That List Atlanta, and they made her look like a complete and total dumbass. Do you think that helped her real estate business? No. That's where she makes the money, not making $30,000 off of an episode. So don't be confused with, and don't be romanced with hit it and quit it money. Look for something that's going to sustain you for the long haul and build your personal brand.
For me, TV felt like the next level of the video version of Zillow Gone Wild. A lot of creators and even myself will do a green screen review of a Zillow home, but when a bunch of production companies approached me, we want to do a show, I found one that made sense. That idea just seemed like the best way and the best production way to take it to that next level. And I think TV, especially HGTV, really can bring in a new audience at a new scale. And a lot of what I'm doing on the accounts now, no homes will make or break me at this stage. There's very strong, steady growth. And that's to me, another, a catapult level of press and news and interest that I can really elevate it. And hopefully brand, it brings brands to me. It brings growth to me. So it just felt like that level was a better way to go. And fortunately, it worked out.
No, that's great. One more question, and then I want to do some audience Q&A. Where do you guys see the industry going, right? Real estate every day. Today, Glenda, the NAR news. Real estate broadly is always going to be a topic of discussion. How do you, let's say the next couple of years, right? How is your content either going to change or not going to change based on the industry and where it's headed?
I think now more than ever, people are looking for advice. They're looking to be led. Again, when you can bring value, that really is the key to content. It's not just about post to be perfect or creating content to put out there. It's context around your content. My friend who's a lender, he posted a video that got 30 million views about how he ate chicken nuggets when he worked at McDonald's and 35,000 were missing and he thought he'd eaten them all. That didn't get him any mortgage business. It didn't build his credibility as a loan officer. And it almost completely destructed his account. So, because he had a bunch of people follow him about chicken nuggets, not about mortgages. So I think that all content creation should be much more in context to what your long-term goals are. People are always going to need a place to live. They're always going to buy and sell real estate, even though many corporations would like to make us a renter nation. And talking about the friction in the industry is really, for me, I could talk about that for the next 10 years, right off into the sunset. Praise the Lord and pass the money.
That's amazing. Samir?
Yep, for me, and thankfully you mentioned that there will always be homes. I think of it as like an outlet for people. I always try to, the homes are never like a hoarder home or someone down on their luck. It's usually someone with too much money that made bad design decisions, and I try to keep it going, and hopefully the pipeline of homes never ends, where it's a place of joy for people, and to continue that and to connecting people. I love shares. Like, you can't see public share numbers, but I'm always looking at the shares on posts to see like how many people are taking these homes to DMs, like which ones are driving that kind of interest.
Yeah, that's critical, the shares. Have you done Michael Jordan's house?
Maybe.
In Chicago?
It's been off and on the market for a long
14
time.
Years.
They need to make it a museum. I tried to make it a museum once.
Oh, I like that idea.
A GoFundMe museum.
Well, thank you both. This is fantastic. I want to ask if anyone has questions in the audience for these two. Any questions? Can you guys hear him? The mic's great. Thank you.
Okay. Glenda, you just mentioned a little bit about how you find joy in the space that you're in. And Samir, you kind of touched on it a little bit as well. But I was curious about the finances a little bit, because it seems like the income is flowing. Glenda, you mentioned sustainability, and that makes a lot of sense. So it looks like, or it seems like, that, you know, working till you're 67 is, or 70 is not going to be needed. So I'm curious about a little more of the joy that you experience through, you know, creating content and being in a digital space and even being in the physical space with real estate.
Well, for me, I mean, I barely graduated from high school. The mere fact that I have the ability to help people with what is usually their single largest asset is my, I'm honored that people let me do that. As a child, I grew up in rental homes. My mom, single parent, she didn't have enough money to buy a house. So if I won the lotto tomorrow of $600 million, I would still be a real estate agent on Sunday, because I am the ambassador of the American dream. Like, I'm a product of it. I've seen the pride that it builds. It fills my heart. Every day I wake up and I'm living my dream life. Like, I can't even, like, some days I'm afraid to open my eyes because it's not work to me. Content creation isn't work. I help people buy, sell, and invest in real estate. I help real estate agents get better at their job. Like, for me, like, this is the life. And so if I win the lottery tomorrow, I'm still going to be at my open house on Sunday, no problemo. And I think that you've got to have that passion about your content creation. That's the secret sauce. Like, that's the magic of content creation, is creating content in context that you love, that you're passionate about. And if you always use that formula, it's never like work. It's never like you get up and like, I don't want to do this. You're excited to do it. So find what you love and talk about it, and I promise you the money will come. That's not my fine.
Samir, if you won the lottery, should we expect a Zillow Gone Wild post on Monday?
Are you buying that $20
million
house?
Well, I have to buy one of the houses if I win. That's just my, on a Sunday. I don't know if I can top that. Yeah, I think it's just thinking about like how many millions of people that you can reach daily, monthly, and bring joy to them. I've always thought of the internet as a fun place, as I don't know why people go online and fight with people all day. We should be, you know, connecting, and why comment on things you don't like? Just block it or go somewhere else. So just thinking about just being able to reach people daily, and I see shares, I see comments. Randomly people will be like, oh, I know you from Silicon Wild. Like, it's cool to create that connection for people. And home, like, everyone has some version of their home. So to provide a window into how people live in different places, how people aspirationally want to live, dream homes, all of that, I think, is like such a top level thing for people, like American Dream, owning a home and being able to show that at different in different places, at different scales, and like I said, like being able to reach millions of people a month in that space, it's a lot of fun.
Any other questions?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to go to the mic. Come on, you're running them.
So I'm like a volunteer, but I've also been participating and working. This is my first South By. So thanks for even letting me do this. But I have a question for you, Ms. Baker, Ms. Glenda. I don't know what you prefer. But I was doing some research on you just now, and you call yourself the ambassador of the American Dream, and you had a video on your Instagram where you talked about between January 3rd and 30th, that is the big time for people to buy homes. So you have somebody like a Russell Wilson who's still trying to sell his homes because he's moving NFL teams. But going down to people who are going towards the American Dream, specifically talking about recent graduates and early professionals, what is your advice for transitioning into the American Dream, knowing that we have such a short window to buy, to rent, and to work towards that?
Oh, I love this question. So the video that, and I can't believe you looked me up, but the video that you're referencing is a video that I posted on my Instagram about if you're going to put your house on the market, if you're going to buy or sell real estate in 2024, do it before September 1st. Because once the election ads hit, people will hit pause. They don't make big decisions in uncertain times. In any presidential election, that's just a normal cycle. But if you're a first-time home buyer or you're trying to become a homeowner, it is more important now than ever that you do it sooner rather than later. It doesn't matter how inexpensive, how small the product is. Get your feet wet. Do something that's at least two bedrooms. You can rent out the other room. It will pay your mortgage, okay? So buy the least expensive two-bedroom something in the safest neighborhood that you can find. If you hold that home for 2 years, the profit that you will make will be exempt up to $250,000, and you can use that to parlay in to your next investment property. But you always want, and the reason that I'm so bullish on it, and I want you to do it now, is because corporations are buying up $0 to $500,000 homes all across this country, especially where first-time home buyers want to live. If you do not take advantage and buy those homes now, you won't be a homeowner. They will rent the world back to you, period. That's not me trying to scare you. That's me telling you the honest to God truth. In the last 12 months, 19,000 homes have been bought in Atlanta, Georgia by corporations, three bedrooms, two baths or more, and they are running the rents up to keep you on the hamster wheel so you will never be able to buy a house. So buy the smallest two bedroom you can find in the safest neighborhood, rent out that other room, have somebody else pay your mortgage, and parlay that into a book of investment property.
Thanks.
That was great.
Thank you.
Anything else? I think we have a couple more minutes. Any other questions?
Great.
Amazing stories. Thank you so much. Very inspiring. I'm a real estate broker here in Austin.
kind of a weird bird. I do residential, commercial, mixed use, architectural properties. Come to South By every 3 or 4 months. We just take it for granted being in Austin. I'm curious, I purposely avoided all the AI sessions and robotics, and that stuff's amazing. I'm more practical. I'm curious to get your thoughts on some of these big overarching trends, AI, augmented, all everything you can think, all the big trends, and how are they kind of grassroots level going to impact real estate in the next 1 year and 10 years? I think we tend to overestimate how things are going to be impacted in the short term and underestimate how impactful they could be over many years. So curious to get your thoughts.
I mean, I think from like my standpoint, I've seen like Zillow already has like virtual tours. So being able to put on glasses and be at home might make showings easier or harder, or at least more entertaining. I see a lot of like AI architecture that like people think is real all around. So that's kind of annoying to see out there. But yeah, I think in my space, it'll make it maybe a little bit more fun. A lot of agents have told me they use it to help write their listings, which maybe it's easy to tell which ones are AI listings or not. But other than that, yeah, I don't know how much more it'll impact.
Authentic intelligence is the substitute. Artificial intelligence is the substitute. Authentic intelligence is the substance. There isn't any AI that is ever going to be able to tell somebody that a primary bedroom on the main floor in Cobb County, where 53% of the population is over 62, is going to capture more money than a home, a 5-4 and a door with all the bedrooms upstairs. You having that knowledge of your marketplace, of your clientele, that cannot be stolen from you with AI. AI should be used to enhance your business, but artificial intelligence is just that, a substitute. Authentic intelligence is the substance. And I think that in real estate, that is 1,000% true. But you need to be real with your people. That's how you keep them.
Hi, I'm Christine. Had a question about how you continue to build up your respective businesses. You know, Glenda, you talked about courses. Samir, you talked about doing TV. You're not doing this all by yourselves, though, right? Do you have teams? How are you building up those teams? And how are you thinking about building those respective businesses to grow beyond just what you yourself are doing?
Well, I mean, Griff is our team. He leads the team for us on those ancillary businesses. Estate Media runs the newsletter, all of that type. Like, I'm a real estate agent. Mm-hmm. I'm really good at selling houses. I'm not really good at distributing a newsletter, and that's not the highest and best use of my time. Getting a team in place to help you with those ancillary businesses. I have someone who helps me with all of my curriculum and education. For me, I've got it all in my head, but getting it out, that's not my forte. So engaging people that are specialists, that are sharpshooters in the arenas where you want to excel, that really is the key to the success of the monetization of other avenues for your business.
Just to follow up on that, how did you find a course specialist to help you with that?
Well, actually, Griff and I were at a party together, and he told me a little bit about what he did, and I was like, oh, wait a minute. He is the sharpshooter. He's the missing link for me. I think that find somebody that is doing what you want to do. So I look at Josh Flagg. I'm like, okay, who's leading him? I don't need to reinvent the wheel. This is not brain surgery over here. Like, literally, if you want to be the next Taylor Swift, figure out how she is running her business model, and then you find the person that can do that for you. Same thing with, don't think that you need to do it on your own. Don't think that you need to scour this or find the person that is doing it the way you want to do it, and then duplicate it. period?
I don't have a team. I probably need a better team. I'm very like hands-on, and like I need to be a part of the content. Like I don't even schedule posts because I want to be there when they're published. So that's just what I'm really good at. So that's what I focus the most on. But I think like working with Griff or like on the sales side, I'm obviously not so good at that. So finding people who can sell, who know how to sell, who have those connections, who can like specialize and do that, the things you aren't good at, I think that's just, you got to go seek them out and have them. And like, you might be worried about giving up control or like find they might not be your style, but that's okay too. You like, you can always move on to someone else. Like don't feel like you're stuck to one person that's doing your video production we were talking about. Just, you know, that's okay too. You kind of become a boss where you got to fire people that you're working with and find people that are the right fit for you, but not being afraid to seek those people out that can do things for you in your business that you are not good at, and like trying to stick to what you are good at.
Thank you.
I think we're at time. Thank you guys. I appreciate it. Thank you everyone for coming. Glenda, Samir, thank you both. This was great.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you all.